And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Hauck.
Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which you have always been and that which has always been in you. I am Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. It is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Well, hey, everybody out there, welcome to the month of June. Here we are, June the 5th. And I just want to do a quick shout out to the Southern Ute out there over 2 weeks ago, and just spent some time with them and beautiful people. And just had a wonderful time. I just appreciate the hospitality, and just want to just say a quick shout out to my friends and new friends that I have made. So thank you all, and I can't wait till we are together once again. So welcome to tonight's show. We're going to have some fun with this one. It's going to be entitled Reading the Tea Leaves. Do you see what I see? And I know you start talking about tea leaves and everything else, a lot of people, you know, don't really quite understand, you know, is there an art to reading the tea leaves? And, you know, literally, yes, there is an art to it. But, you know, figuratively, it's also a metaphor for being able to interpret the signs and patterns in life, and be able to predict some sort of like future outcome or some sort of, you know, futuristic behavior. So, but I'll say more about that. So if you would like to be part of this show, you'd like to call in, you can please do. You know, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I'm going to be taking your calls in the second half of the show today. And just in case you're unable to spend the whole hour with me, these shows are also podcasted. So if you want to go back and listen to the other shows, I invite you to go back onto the website, and you'll find the archive sections right there as soon as you come on my page. And certainly these broadcasts all focus on the integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all placed within the context of relationships that we have with ourselves, relationship that we have with others, and relationships that we have with God or the divine. And the reason why I place this integration in and through relationships is because when you think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual woundedness in and through relationship. And yet, here's the irony, that we can also discover our greatest healing, our strength, our peace, our forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. And ironically, these relationships just might be within our own families, or we might experience them within our coworkers and friends. But all in all, whenever we transform, whenever we change, we also transform others by our presence or our grace and our understanding. But first and foremost, forgiveness and kindness and compassion begins with how we treat ourselves. Because whenever we become more compassionate with ourselves, we then can become more compassionate with others. And when we are more forgiving of ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we can learn to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then discover how this opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. So, as I said, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. Well, I just wanted to start this show just by, just mentioning a dear friend of mine, Harold Koenig, MD. He's the professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences and senior fellow in the Center for the Study of Aging and Human Development at Duke University Medical Center on research on religion, spirituality, and mental health. And Dr. Koenig, he wrote an article back in 2008 in a review in a Canadian Journal of Psychiatry. And he writes about, this integration of religion and spirituality and mental health. And he states very clearly that religious and spiritual beliefs and practices are important resources for coping with illness. It could be mental health illness, it could be a physical illness. So, in other words, some research shows a connection between your beliefs and your sense of well-being, such as positive beliefs, or they may provide comfort and inner strength gained from your own religion or spirituality or meditation and prayer, just to name a few. Now, improving your spiritual health, may not necessarily cure an illness, but it will help you feel better. And one of the things that had always fascinated me is just how people use their religion and spirituality as a means of coping. Because, I've mentioned this on this show many times that I am a firm believer that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything we need for in this life in terms of our giftedness, or let's say our skills, our talents, and our strengths, or character traits, and so forth. And how we live out our giftedness in and through various relationships. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts to one another, or similar skills, or talents, or strengths, or character traits, no two people express these identically. So, in other words, each of us has a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. And let's be honest, we can try to imitate how we do things or how another person does things, but nobody can duplicate us, because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as an acheiatos, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. And how I explain this to the kids that I counsel, it's like, look at your thumb, look at your thumbprint. That nobody has the exact same thumbprint as you, because yours is unique, just as you are unique. So tonight we're gonna take a look at kind of life's irony of how we often hold, let's say, emotional pain and sorrow, as well as profound joy and peace in our hearts. Much in the same way a teacup holds not just tea, but also it holds many stories of heartbreak or loss or love and bliss. Let's get into it. Let me just ask you a question. What's your favorite kind of tea? What's your go-to? Right now I'm drinking my favorite, which is good old throat comfort tea, because unbeknownst to a lot of people, I do talk a lot. So I constantly want to keep my throat well lubed, let's say. But other people may prefer Earl Grey or a mint tea. Or has anybody out there tried oolong tea or spiced chai? That's also a favorite of mine, or a cinnamon. Well, apart from enjoying hot tea or cold tea, I don't know if you realize this or not, but over 15 million Americans drink tea. And recently I came across an article that was entitled 10 Essential Tea Statistics to Know from 2023. And like I said, it was just a fascinating article, and it stated that tea is the second most popular drink in the world. And the Turkish people are world champions in tea drinking. They just consume the most. And Unilever is the world's largest tea company. I don't know if you've ever heard them before, but they hold that record of selling the most food. But China, in its of itself, holds 40% of the global tea market just within that country. And in 2023, Americans consumed almost 86 billion, yes, that's billion with a B, billion servings of tea, or close to about 4 billion gallons just in that year alone, 2023. And 48% of United States tea consumers, but in restaurants or other types of food service locations. And yet only 15 to 20% of the tea drunk in U.S. households is hot tea. The rest of it would be like a cold tea, or an iced tea, if you would. And the United States is the second largest importer of tea in the world. And after, I think I found this particular statistic, most striking is that after COVID-19, the most popular tea is herbal tea. Okay, so a lot of tea drinkers out there. Okay, and drinking tea has served almost as a kind of a bridge, if you will, between different cultures for centuries. And in contrast to many, other human traditions, it affects our health in a very positive way because we live in a world that currently shines, let's say, an attractive light on the benefits of drinking tea. Now, if you're not a fan of drinking tea, maybe now is a good time to get started, or maybe only your recollections of tea might be coming from your 8th grade American history class, where we were taught that the Boston Tea Party occurred when the colonists basically had enough of being taxed, and therefore, they just during the cover of darkness threw crates of tea into the Boston Harbor. So, but since then, United States has been the second largest importer of tea in the world. Now, the history of tea itself stretches back over thousands of years and covers vast regions such as the Silk Road and all over the world from the 16th century to the present day. So, ironically, throughout history, tea has been an interesting commodity, let's say, that has brought cultures and peoples, customs, and just other norms together all over a cup of tea. And I remember the first time being in India and sharing a cup of chai with religious leaders and or local merchants. And the chai that was served was always carefully prepared. And it was served with this sense of gratitude, something that people took pride in. And this was also the first time that I fully realized the meaning behind the greeting, namaste. Or in other words, the light within me recognizes the light within you. And since then, I've meditated on this saying, namaste, the light within me recognizes the light within you, and have come to appreciate a deeper level of insight and awareness. And, perhaps if we flip around that saying in a little bit in English language, we might discover that another way to appreciate namaste really means that I'm able to see the light within you, or the potential for you to realize that you're light, because I'm first able to see the light within myself, where I'm able to see myself as light. And there is a tremendous potential for all human beings to recognize and embrace the light within themselves, as well as one another. And engaging in this integrative meditation, let's say, compels us to sooner or later stop asking to receive things, let's say, but instead, we ask to have unforgiveness and bitterness and or other negative attitudes to be removed. This really changes how we approach prayer or how we approach our religious and spiritual rituals and the symbolism by what we do. Instead of asking to be given things, let's ask for things to be removed. And this elimination of the negative and, let's say, life-draining parts is so that what's lying dormant in us can be unencumbered to come up and come in very transformative and life-giving ways. So perhaps there's a lot more to consider about the power of tea in this matter. So just, you know, think about the moments that you shared a cup of tea with a friend or a family member. You know, there may have been times when you shared good news, or you're catching up from old news, or even just sitting down and not saying anything to one another because the sorrow that you two were sharing was actually beyond words. And yet, even though tea has this dynamic to bring people together, unfortunately, many people still feel alienated and alone. Because many people, as I've come across them, have always struggled with sharing what's inside of themselves, you know, believing that they really don't have anything worthwhile to say, let alone, I don't really have anything worthwhile to do. And yet, looking inside a teacup can teach us a lot about the need to look within ourselves and to see the incredible life and light we have been given to share with others. And as I said, this is, you know, here is a dynamic of looking at the bottom of a teacup. Yeah. Let's also consider all the liquids that that particular cup has held. Yeah. Hot tea, cold tea, tea with lemon, tea with maybe sugar, maybe tea with some milk. Maybe you've had some loose tea leaves and, you know, they're at the bottom of the cup. So you keep the tea leaves and you try to interpret the patterns and the shapes to see what will happen in the future. Well, a teacup is rather unique because it can contain anything that's poured into it. And so do we. I mean, we often think in isolated terms of that it's this or that, or hot or cold, or light or dark. But have we ever considered that we have the ability to be able to hold extremes simultaneously? You know, and just realizing that, what kind of insight that provides for us as we consider ultimately who we are as a limitless and a vast soul, and that capacity to be able to hold space for another person. Now, just for example, many times I think that we're tempted to isolate, you know, the horrors we see or the pain and suffering throughout the world that we hear about, or maybe even our own pain and suffering that we have experienced. And we wonder about how there are any joy in our lives, or maybe with those who, you know, are struggling with death and dying issues, or hungry, or maybe they're in prison or among people who do what they have to do in order to survive. I mean, has anyone, you know, do they have the nerve to talk about joy in the face of unspeakable human sorrows that surround us, or the unspeakableness of a hopelessness, you know, a relentless suffering and oppression that has ruptured the soul? And yet, you know, there it is. For anyone who dares to enter into human sorrows deeply, there's also this greater awareness of joy and bliss. I mean, even when we're faced with utter ruin or dejection or annihilation, there are still memories we can share. Not only of our pain and sorrow, but also those memories that are filled with laughter and smiles, hugs, joys. Not based solely on what we believe to be successes or even a rational way out of this just intense suffering. But have you ever noticed that there's an inner joy that comes from the resiliency of the human spirit? You know, this resiliency, this human spirit deeply rooted in relationships that we have with each other, even with God or the divine. And this is a joy that is fully alive despite the odds. So you see, the teacup of life, so to speak, is a teacup of joy as much as it is a teacup of sorrow. It's a cup in which sorrow and joy and grief and healing and mourning and dancing are never separated. If you've ever read anything from Henry Nouwen, one of my favorite books of his is, you know, Can You Drink from This Cup? He makes an interesting point regarding, you know, cups in general. He writes, if joys could not be where sorrows are, the teacup of life would never be drinkable. I'll say that again. If joys could not be where sorrows are, the teacup of life would never be drinkable. So here's a little mindfulness exercise. Let's say before we take a first sip of our tea, you know, pause and consider how we hold the cup. Do we hold it with both hands? Do we hold it with one hand? How do we hold the cup? How do we approach it? And before we take that first sip, look deeply and intently into that cup of tea and see the hidden joys and the joy that's found in our sorrows. We see the mystery of hope and resiliency that can be discovered in times of your own deep emotional wounds. Because how many times have we looked into our cups, or let's say the cups of others, and wonder where joy could be found, let alone where in the world did God go? Because you see, how can I see the light in others when I can't even see the light within myself, let alone where is God? And why do we have such a hard time seeing and hearing and knowing where God is in our lives? Well, I have a particular theory about that. You know, have you ever played peekaboo with a baby? I mean, it seems like one of those games that just comes naturally. You know, it's funny, it's exciting. And I think we adults, we get more joy out of playing the game than the babies do because we love their expressions. We love seeing their little faces as they jump up with excitement and smile. And sometimes they laugh or they giggle or they coo. You know, if you're playing peekaboo with a baby and they cry, well, okay, you're either doing it wrong or maybe you got stinky breath. But at any rate, it's loads of fun. In fact, I've seen some of the most hard-hearted individuals sound like complete fools when they play peekaboo with babies. And I am convinced that playing peekaboo is something we never outgrow. Because as we get older and into the toddler years, we play with the jack-in-the-box toy with a little prank and the music, and then the monkey or the clown will pop up. And then we laugh, and then we quickly learn to anticipate when the monkey or the clown's going to pop up at the right time. And interestingly enough, playing peekaboo helps children form mental images or objects, you know, such as remembering where their favorite toy is when it's under a blanket or in a toy box. You know, it teaches the baby that we are still here, even though they cannot see our faces for a moment. You know, where did I go? Here I am. Well, ironically, we never outgrow object permanence as we get older. You know, what begins in infancy becomes more and more abstract the older we get, such as, you know, holding on to a mental image of a loved one, even after their death. You know, we can close our eyes and we can see their face, or we can hear their laughter. We can remember how they lived. And in order to do this, we have to form the context in order to see their faces or remember their voices. So let's take this concept of object permanence deeper into our relationships. And let's just ask the question, does God play peekaboo with us? You know, maybe not in a malicious way to hide from us and then jumps out and scares us, but perhaps in a modified version as a means for us to learn that perhaps in order for us to see and hear and touch God more clearly. We need to see and hear and feel with our hearts, with our soul. Because remember, wasn't it Jesus who once said that the pure in heart shall see God? You know, to be honest, most of the time, we want God to be someone or something other for us, instead of allowing God to be who God is, realizing that it is we who need to be transformed to be able to see and hear and touch God more clearly than before. So in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about, or I should say I'm going to be talking about, you know, taking a look at where God shows up, you know, in the most unlikely places and in and through the most unlikely people, especially when we look inside a teacup. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on this matter. So again, if you want to call in, be part of the show, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back with you in 1 minute. Hey, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. In the first half of the show tonight, I was talking about how tea and teacups can teach us about all that is held not only within the cup, you know, like hot and or cold beverages and so on, but also holding the teacup of life, so to speak, is a teacup of joy, as much as it is the teacup of sorrow at times. It's a cup in which sorrow and joy and grief and feeling and dancing and mourning are never separated. And I mention Henry Nouwen's book, Can You Drink This Cup? He makes an interesting point in this distinction. He writes, you know, if joy could not be where sorrow is, the teacup of life would never be drinkable. And that is so profound, because how many of us are able to find joy in the midst of sorrow? How many of us are able to find comfort in the midst of pain or loss? And as I had shared in the first half of the show, you know, just a little mindfulness exercise the next time that you have a cup of tea, you know, because, you know, before you take that first sip of tea, just pause and consider how you hold the cup. You know, if you hold it with one hand or two hands and just how you grasp it. And before you take that first sip, just look deeply and intently into that cup of tea and see the hidden joys, even in the midst of sorrows. And the number of stories that you have shared with another person over a cup of tea. Because how many times have we looked into our cups or the cups of others, and we were unable to find the joy, or we really questioned, you know, I cry out to you, God, by day, and I don't hear anything. Where are you? And how can I see the light in others when I can't even see the light within myself, let alone how do I even know where God is? And yet, why do we have such a hard time seeing and hearing and knowing where God is in our lives? Well, you know, I think at times we're very tempted to isolate, you know, our pain, our suffering, and the horrors that we see throughout the world. And we often wonder, you know, how can there be any joy in our lives or in the lives of others who are struggling to, you know, eat, or those who are dying, or those who are imprisoned, or among people who do not what they have, you know, that they have to do what they have to do, not just to survive. And, you know, does anybody have the nerve or the audacity to talk about joy in the face of unspeakable human sorrows that surround us, that seem to plague us every day when we turn on the news? Well, as I mentioned, you know, with object permanence and just the example with the jack-in-the-box, you know, is just one example that God does not play, you know, peekaboo with us. But we can see God. We can hear God. And we can touch God as we remove things in our lives that get in the way. And what's clouding our vision from being able to see God more clearly? What's keeping us from understanding where God shows up, you know, in the most unlikely places and often through the most unlikely people? And I have to tell you, the first time this lesson was driven home to me was when I was having lunch with my college classmates. And we were there, you know, just talking and catching up with each other. And somehow the subject, you know, became, you know, about listening to God in prayer. You know, how do we do this? Or when do we do this? And so forth. And when it was my turn to share, you know, my experiences, a student from Africa held up his hand and stopped me in the middle of my sentence and told me I was doing it all wrong. And I got offended. What do you mean I'm doing it all wrong? I've been talking to God all my life. And at that point, he again held up his hand and he replied, "That's just it. You do all the talking. You never take time to listen to God." And you know what? He was right. I didn't like it, but he was right. I did do all the talking. And it seemed like from that moment on, my whole awareness shifted. You know, because of instead of praying with my head and from my thoughts and my logic, I now started to pray from my heart and ultimately from that soul connection I have with God. In fact, I started to see and hear all the layers of woundedness in me. Again, not in a malicious way that God brought these things to my attention just to see me squirm, but instead showing me all the things that needed to be healed. You know, the psychological, emotional, spiritual wounds that clouded my sight and sound of seeing and hearing the Spirit of God more clearly in myself and in my relationships. Now, Mother Teresa was once asked what she says to God in her prayers, to which, you know, she replied, "I don't say anything. I listen." "Well, then what does God say to you?" "Well, nothing," she said. "God listens." And what a difference that makes. Because whenever I prayed with my heart and my soul, and whenever I do that to this day, I quickly discover that God does the same thing. See, it's being in tune with God on a soul level in which we discover that words aren't needed. In fact, you might say that there are times when our words get in the way. And this is true in our relationships with others. There's a tremendous potential for all human beings to recognize and embrace the light within themselves, as well as embracing the light in one another. And engaging in this integrative meditation compels us to, sooner or later, stop asking to receive thanks. Instead, ask to have unforgiveness and bitterness and other negative attitudes to be removed. And this is so that whatever is lying dormant in us, the good things, can be unencumbered to come up and come out in life-giving ways. And this is the transformative truth. Because for anybody who dares to enter into human sorrows deeply, there is also this greater awareness of joy and bliss. I mean, even when we're faced with ruin or annihilation, you know, there are still memories that we can share. And it's an inner joy that comes and gets stronger and stronger from the resiliency of this human spirit, deeply rooted in our relationships with one another, and certainly our relationship with God. Well, you've been following me for some time. You know, I've been to India about 4 times in my life. And each time I learned something new about myself and others, and definitely where and when God shows up. Again, I'm convinced in the most unlikely places and through the most unlikely people. Now, I only know a few simple words and phrases of Hindi, but it was connecting to others on that soul level that, I am convinced that allows us to truly communicate from who we are. I mean, simple gestures of folded hands and a gentle bow and greeting each other by saying namaste, to be given a cup of tea from an elderly woman who wore her hardened life on her hands and in her face. There was this heart-to-heart, soul-to-soul connection. And that's where God shows up. And this was clearly a lesson that I learned my last trip. It was definitely before the pandemic. It was like December of 2019. And like I said, with that being my 4th trip, I wanted to do more intentional goal-related experiences, let's say, that I had not done so much before. And little did I realize that I had heard that prayer and responded by saying, okay, you want to see more of me? Then you're going to have to stop, be quiet, and pay attention to the ordinariness around you. Well, it's no secret that I'm a pretty big guy, and it's hard for me not to stand out in a crowd. So whenever I go to India, I can't go to India unnoticed. You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, people would certainly look and wonder, what in the world is this dude doing here? But it became more about a random person's desire to be a blessing to me that taught me to not only be more intent in looking for God in the ordinary acts of kindness, but also this is exactly where the extraordinariness of God is displayed. Well, I had the opportunity on this 4th trip to visit Babaji's cave in Kolkachina in the Himalayas. And if you've ever been there, you know what it's like. And when I came down from that mountain, an old woman who lived with her son and daughter in a very humble dwelling gave me a cup of tea and gestured for me to sit down. You know, I don't know, maybe she saw my face and I was exhausted and she thought I was going to fall down. But at any rate, the kindness in her eyes as she handed me a simple cup of chai, a simple cup of tea, touched my soul. And another time, I was visiting Vatsalya Gram Ashram in the town of Vrindavan. And, you know, they were offering free cataract surgeries for people in the town. I just happened to be visiting when they were performing, you know, these surgeries. And I think somewhere they performed over 300 surgeries in a few days, just something that doctors from around the world came together and they just offered this service to anybody who showed up, no questions asked. And as I walked around the ashram, I saw families living in tents and makeshift shelters, just all to be close to their loved ones who were having the surgery that week. And as I was walking around, families and children would invite me to sit with them and have tea or a simple snack. They would wave me over, or the kids would come over and like grab my hand and drag me over. It's like, sit, sir, please sit with us. And they're all filled with smiles and gratitude to share what they had with this stranger. And I wasn't sure who was blessed the most, me or them. Because although we didn't speak one another's language, we did share this soul-to-soul connection. And during this time at Vatsalya Gram, I also visited the children who lived there. You know, it's the children's ashram. And knowing that kids in general love music, I took along my Native American flute with me. It's the one that you hear at the beginning and the end of these broadcasts. And I played for them. You know, I figured, why not? I'll share something that, you know, a different language, let's say. And I visited with them for about an hour each day. And I would play, and they would return the blessing by singing for me. And, you know, these were like the little guys and girls, ages 5 through 7, and teenagers and so forth. And they would just, you know, clap, and, you know, then they would just break out in song. And they're like, wow. I came away blessed. Well, one day I was visiting the house where mentally challenged kids live. And again, as I played, their eyes widened and their toothy smiles were visible. And at one point I was playing, or as I was playing, I should say, a young boy, somewhere about 8 or 9 years old, who was born without his sight, started to hum along with the tune I was playing. And the, you know, the grandmothers, the mothers, the aunts, who were the caretakers of the children, all were astonished. I mean, they just couldn't believe what they were hearing. And then later I was told through an interpreter that this particular boy had never sang before. The everyday examples of where God shows up, giving a cup of cold water, or giving a cup of tea, a kind word, a smile, sitting with somebody in silence. When you've done it to the least, God's saying is as if you've done it to me. When we can share a cup of tea that contains all of our life experiences with one another, and they do the same with us, I get this image that I imagine that it makes all of heaven start doing backflips. You know, I just love that image. Like, heaven is just like going crazy, you know, with just overflowing joy. And really, when you think about it, God's not asking anything difficult from us. Yeah. Very simple. Visiting the sick. Visiting those who are in prison, giving water, feeding. These are all things that we're capable of doing. But what makes these ordinary acts of kindness transformational is that God shows up in the midst, and then it becomes extraordinary. Grace-filled moments, teachable moments, life-changing moments. Because as we reach out and minister to another in the physical sense, we also minister to others in the spiritual sense. But unfortunately, we often make it harder or more complicated than what it needs to be. You know, I think in a sense, God says to us, you know, you do what you can do. I'll take care of the rest. If you ever want to see the extraordinary grace in action, pay attention to the ordinary. See the extraordinariness of God in the ordinariness of life. Tangible holiness, as it were, as we pay attention to how, when, where, and in whom God shows up in our lives. Where have you discovered God in the most unlikely places and in through the most unlikely people? Where have you been part of those ordinary blessings and been part of God's extraordinariness? See, it doesn't certainly take a lot of effort on our part to see and hear the pain of others. And we don't have to look any further than sometimes within our own families or within our own communities to be reminded that, yes, pain, misery, and suffering runs so, so deep. And pain and grief and loss and misery is something that we all have in common, kind of like that thumbprint. And regardless of race and creed and color and language barriers or even social distancing, but we also have in common our strength, our humanity, our love, our perseverance, and grace. We hold both in this shared humanity. Just like a teacup can hold something hot or something cold, like an iced tea, when it's shared with another person at just the right time, it could just be the difference that a person needs to be reminded that they're not alone in this world. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me today, and be sure to drop me a line and let me know what has touched you about today's subject. And until we sit with each other again, may we always look for the light in others, as well as the light that lives within ourselves. Take care. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave a thousand comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.